Louise McSharry on 2FM.
Most of us got to know Sophie Ellis-Bextor via the absolutely iconic hit Groove Jet, If This Ain't Love. And then many of us came to know her again via the Kitchen Disco during lockdown. She has now released a book allowing us to get to know her even better. It's called Spinning Plates, Music, Men, Motherhood and Me. And Sophie joins me now. Hello, Sophie.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm interested, what made you write a book?
Essentially being asked.
Yeah.
I don't know if I always thought, oh, I'll write a book one day, but I think it was serendipity, really. I was approached last year by Hodda, and the original idea was to do a series of essays. Mm. I think born out of a podcast that I do with the same name called Spinning Plates.
Yeah.
And some of the themes that come up. But as I started writing, I thought, oh, I think I'm writing an autobiography here. So it kind of grew, really. And I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, the writing is great. Like, it feels like you're talking to a friend, or like a friend is talking to you, I think, which is wonderful. It makes it a super easy read, which is what I personally like. And it was really interesting to see all the different facets of your life. I mean, I think some people would be aware that you had kind of a celebrity mom as a kid. And that's something that kind of seems to have come up for you quite a lot in childhood, which is not an experience that many of us have had. So what impact do you think that had on you?
Well, I mean, it's, yeah, everybody's so influenced by what goes on in their childhood. And for me, my mum was, she was doing TV from when I was born, but she presented something called Blue Peter between ages when I was 4 and 8. Mm. And at the time that was, you know, there was only 4 channels anyway, and only 2 of them had kids shows on. So pretty much everybody was watching my mum as well. So yeah, I always thought of it a bit like my other sibling in a way.
Yeah.
And at the time I was an only child as well. So, you know, it was impactful. But then when my mum finished that, she had my little brother, Jack. And that sort of took over in my headspace, I think. And then, you know what kids are like. By the time I was 11 and started secondary school, all of that, you know, Blue Peter was sort of old news, really. So it wasn't sort of long lasting, but it was definitely there for some pretty formative bits at the beginning.
Yeah, probably a good time to have that kind of 4 to 8, as opposed to like when you're in adolescence or as a teenager. It's a bit can be a bit trickier.
Yeah, maybe so, maybe so. But I mean, also my mum was only in her 20s when she was presenting it, you know, so she was pretty young too.
Yeah, yeah. And I was, I want to talk to you about music, but, you know, since it's come up now, I was surprised to read, I didn't realise that you were so young when you became a mother.
I suppose relatively, yeah. So I got pregnant at 24, and at the time none of my girlfriends had any babies. Mm. So Sunny, my eldest, who is now 17 and who's music I can hear through the floorboards, he was like the communal baby, really. And in some ways it was a little bit isolating because I didn't have anyone else that I felt was going through the same things as me.
Yeah,
but the flip of it was that he was the baby that they all got to know, and that was really nice.
Yeah, that's so, yeah. Nice. I was actually at a lunch with some friends recently, and I was the first of our crew to have a baby, and one of my friends apologized to me. She was like, I don't think we really gave you the time or the appreciation of what you were going through at all, because when you don't have friends, when you don't have friends who are going through it, it can feel quite isolating because it is so completely consuming, and you can't understand that really until you experience it yourself.
And all your priorities have shifted. So I remember, you know, going out to meet friends for supper, and if they were running late, I'd be sat there at the table thinking, oh, I could have done bedtime, I could have done, you know, done an extra story at bedtime or things like that. And then I think no one else really understands why it's suddenly come at the center of your world, really. Their priorities have shifted so dramatically.
Yeah, and how busy takes on an entirely new meaning.
That's very true as well, yes.
I thought I was busy, like when I was, you know, when I did before I had kids. I was not. I didn't know any better. I want to talk to you about music, though, because you, you were in your first band at the age of 16, at The Audience. Tell me a little bit about that.
So yeah, when I was at school, I was really passionate about music, and I used to go clubbing a lot. And through one of the times I went to a club night, I met a guy who said, I've got a friend looking for a singer in a band. Mm. And I remember thinking, oh, that's probably something I should have, you know, do one time. It's like a rite of passage, you know.
Yeah.
Be able to tell my grandkids I've been in a band. And from that band was it became a band called The Audience. And as soon as we did our first gig, I was like, oh, I think I found it, actually. I think this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And as luck would have it, that band ended up being courted by all these labels. So we signed a record deal when I was 18, and we had 6 offers from 6 different labels. So it was sort of quite hyped at the time.
Mm.
So I finished my A-levels and then went straight off and just went on the road with my band. So that was the beginning of it for me. But by the time we were 20, we were dropped. So it was a very sort of quick introduction to the highs and lows of a lot of things within the music industry.
Yeah.
A very sort of short, you know, chapter.
Yeah, I read about that specific thing in the book. And I was thinking, you know, did that make you, when it kind of, I know you did some modeling in the interim. And then when you came back to music, were you a little bit hesitant?
No, I was really excited. Music was the thing I wanted to do. I just didn't really know what else I could do apart from music, really. Mm. My friends had all gone off to uni. I had no qualifications beyond my A-levels and no real idea what to do. And also, the audience stuff had really swept me along with it, with the record deal and the momentum of that. So when I was on the other side, I thought, what do I do now?
Yeah.
And I thought maybe I've already kind of had the best bit of my career already and I'm not even 21, you know, that's that. So when Groovejet came along, I just sort of seized it with both hands, really. I thought, this is amazing. I get to do it again. And also because it was a dance record, it introduced me to a whole new genre and kind of reframed how I thought about the choices I could make and what I might want to do when it came to singing. It was actually life-changing on every level, really, that song.
Well, it was such a huge song. Like I was just thinking, it really reminds me of the time that I turned 18 and I was I remember it was like the festival of my 18th. I think I was out 10 nights in a row and I was dancing to Groovejet every single night. And I will never hear that song without associating it with that because it was just huge. And there have to be so many people who have similar stories. Like, are you sick of it?
No, I love it. It's such a privilege to play a small part in someone's life like that, you know, being part of their soundtrack, like that's amazing. And I actually don't identify at all with singers who have bad relationships with the songs that people know them for. I think it's a gift. It's wonderful.
Yeah, good. I'm glad to hear it. I went to see you play somewhere. I think it was the Tivoli Theatre in Dublin a few years ago. And and you played it. And the whole vibe, the vibe of your show is so fun. And actually, it's very consistent with the vibe of the Kitchen Disco, I feel like, which we all enjoyed over lockdown. I was really interested to read your writing about motherhood, obviously, because I'm a mother. And I think when you're a mother, you're just obsessed with how other people are doing.
Definitely.
And, you know, you write really beautifully about your experiences of having premature kids and then dealing with illness in your kids. And I can't even imagine how difficult that was. But I think the part that I particularly enjoyed reading is when you talked about how on a good day you feel like you're a good parent and then on a bad day it's not the same, and that you kind of described moments where you feel like you are having a toddler tantrum at your children. And I just so identified with that. And I thought it was interesting to hear you say that was, you know, particularly difficult during lockdown.
Yeah, I felt like everything was really on sort of high intensity, really. I think so that especially the first lockdown, it was just so extraordinary, that the tension, and it was very adrenalized, all of it, because it was all new information and, you know, obsessed with the news and the numbers and this sort of new way we were living, not seeing people, not allowed to do things. I think it was kind of traumatic, really. And, you know, obviously in the moment to moment, it wasn't all bad at all. We were, you know, I was with the people I would have chosen. If someone had said, right, you've got, you know, who are you going to lock up with? I'd choose my kids and my husband. There was a lot of stuff about it that, you know, could have been a lot more challenging. It wasn't all terrible, but, you know, I found like the abstract nature of, okay, you can't go, my mum lives 10 minutes away, you know, but you can't go and see her.
Yeah,
you can't go and meet up with your friends, you can't go and do work. And it made me realize how many of those little casual things that we have in our lives are actually, they're kind of the glue. That's where you, for me, like a lot of my therapy comes from, the time when I walk back from school run and I can phone a friend and just have 20 minutes just to chat through things, those kind of bits. So in the house, I just felt like I didn't have any space for my head. So I definitely found that challenging. So I was definitely a lot more cross, a lot more kind of snappy than normal, I think.
Yeah, and I think I certainly was the same, and I think everyone was the same, because as you say, we didn't have any of our usual outlets or any of the things that we would normally turn to or any quiet moments. I mean, my God, when I think about the way that we all were at home with our children.
Yeah.
All of the children making all of the noise and you know, you didn't have a moment for a thought. And you're right, because we were simultaneously going through something so seismic, and it was also uncertain. Like, I think we'll be processing it for years.
I think you're probably right, actually. Yes. And And also it's quite surreal to think back to a lot of it, isn't it? Because you sort of think, you know, at the beginning of this year, there were 3 months where the kids weren't at school, but already my brain has sort of gone, did that really happen?
Yeah.
It's just strange, very strange days and a lot to think about. And obviously there's some universal themes that everybody experienced, and then everybody's kind of got their own version of the good and bad of what's been going on for the last 18 months as well.
Yeah, 100%. And as I mentioned a few times, the kitchen disco that you put on in your house was just spectacular and such a bright spot, I think, in such a difficult time. Where did the idea for it come from in the first place?
Well, it wasn't my idea at all, actually. It was Richard, my husband. He suggested it really early on because we went into our own sort of mini lockdown just before the national one. And we just wanted to connect with people, missed everyone, missed everything. I had lots of people that I'm friends with, clever musicians, talented people doing these amazing songs at the piano. And I thought, oh, crap, I gave up piano when I was like 15. I can't do that. I can't play guitar. So I just felt a bit stuck, really. And then Richard said, well, why don't we do one of your kind of party sets? We can do some covers. Just get dressed up. We'll just stream it on Instagram and have some fun. And I thought, that's absolute lunacy. Okay, let's give it a go. And after we did the first one, we just both felt lifted, actually. It gave us a tonic. We got a lovely response and it gave us a distraction. And it just became something that we could look forward to and plan and enjoy and also let off a bit of steam. Like a lot of the stress and tension went into, you know, jumping around and learning lyrics and all of that stuff and choosing what the set would be. It was just really fun and gave us something else. And the kids too, you know, they would get dressed up or put on silly masks or help me decorate. And so every Friday at 6:30, that was what we did for weeks on end. We ended up doing 20 discos in total.
I think I saw lots of people commenting on just the sheer number of costumes and we're like, the fancy dress box in that house must be spectacular.
And of course I was kind of adding to it, so you know, everything on order, like, you know, you'd be getting deliveries in the day. It'd be like some, like, I don't know, cleaner for the showers. And then it'd be like some sparkly ice skating suit that I found on either one extreme or the other and nothing in between.
I think, though, as well, like, you know, obviously it connected with people because people needed an outlet and they needed a bit of fun. And, you know, you were really performing just really fun songs and you're such a great performer. But also, I think it was the kids in the background or, like, you know, cooperating enthusiastically or not cooperating at all. And, you know, people, I think, just so identified with that kind of, you know, normality of the family function.
Definitely. I think it was mainly that, to be honest. I mean, the thing is as well, because I couldn't see what was happening behind me most of the time. And so sometimes I'd see a clip back and I'd be like, oh my goodness, it's actually really mesmerizing seeing these kids sort of climbing up and back climbing through my legs or nearly being trodden on or whatever they were doing. I mean, it's going to be a very interesting for us. We haven't looked at any of it for probably since it happened.
Yeah.
But one day I'll have to sit down with them and say, like, should we watch a disco? Like, do you remember this stuff? I don't even know what their memories of it are, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely not like stage school kids. Very much. Turn up if you fancy it and do whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because obviously your mom was on TV and then you have had this multifaceted career now, you know, with podcasting and writing and performing and modeling and all of that stuff. What would you feel like if your kids decided that they wanted to kind of go the same route?
I mean, it'd be fine. I'm open to whatever, really. I think for me, and I'm sure you find this when you're raising your humans too, but for me, the most sort of surprising thing really is that actually it becomes just about letting them be the most sort of full, best version of themselves, really. Mm. I don't feel like I've got really even very much steer on who they are. They sort of came out as they are. Yeah. And then my job is just help them be the happiest version of it, I think.
Yeah.
There's a couple that I think, you know, I would be very surprised if they don't end up doing something, you know, in performance in some way. And then a couple where I think, oh no, you definitely want to do something totally different. And let's just see where it ends up. But I like to think music would be part of their lives because I think it's such a lovely companion, isn't it? If you can turn to songs and, you know, you just get in, you know, it gives you the balance of your emotions from that. I think it's such a positive thing to have alongside you.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you grow up with music, it stays with you. Like, I don't know anybody, you know, the odd time you meet someone who says, oh, I'm not really into music, and I never know what to say to them next. But, you know, I think that's just, you obviously didn't grow up around it, you know? So I feel like, you know, anyone who has it around them will have a love for it, whether it's just their own personal love or whether it's something that they share with other people.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
There is so much in this book that we have not gotten to. There are lots of like nice little kind of show busy stories. I particularly enjoyed the story you tell of bringing Jarvis Cocker back to your flat because you were talking about Alan Partridge at the party and you said, oh, we have the latest episode recorded. And you ended up sitting with you, your boyfriend, and Jarvis Cocker watching Alan Partridge and only realizing afterwards that maybe Jarvis Cocker had a different interest. In coming back to the flat,
it was just how he reacted when we did just watch. I don't know. I might be wrong.
I can see
it's
how
a
that
long time ago.
It is funny though. I mean, I think we've all been there where you're at a party and you're like, "Oh, we should go do blah," and then when you actually get to blah and the noise of the party is gone and it's just you and one other person, even that alone can be a bit like, oh, "Okay, this seemed like such a good idea."
Yeah, it was definitely. There was definitely something about it. I was like, was that okay? Did that all go well? I don't know. Maybe I'll have to ask him. I haven't really seen him since then, so I'll have to ask him.
Yeah, well, please, you'll have to write another book so that we can all find out how that goes. But there are lots of juicy little bits like that in the book if people are interested in that kind of thing. We just didn't get to them all here. but the book is Spinning Plates, Music, Men, Motherhood, and Me. And it's Sophie Ellis Bexter, obviously, is the author. Sophie, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it's lovely talking to you. Louise McSherry on 2FM.